sort of had to do that. Hi, this is Charles and the Daily News and Review. Of course, that was the tail end of James Taylor and the Original Flying Machine with a smile, a little smile for me. Original Flying Machine. What were they thinking? On a Sunday, even though I decided to take the day off, I also decided I would declare it the day of the rebirth of America. Really, it was a day of many distinctions. Today included many similar surprises and inspiring moments. I'll begin with today. Today, Kofi Annan, the Secretary General of the United Nations, nearly took the words right out of my mouth. He said, "It's time for us to stop being economically defensive and start being politically courageous." We'll call him an honorary new patriot. That was cool. But the words I was going to repeat are actually the words of Susan B. Anthony, a special person in my household. She and Elizabeth Cady Stanton led the movement as suffragettes, calling for the right of women to vote. They worked toward that goal for 50 years and still didn't live to see their vision come into being. Women did not receive the right to vote for some 20 years after Susan and Elizabeth's deaths. 2 weeks before her death, Susan B. Anthony's last speech was entitled, "Failure is Impossible." But the quote I wanted to share with you applies to us all. It's a simple reminder of who we have to be as people and citizens in order to cause the world we say we want. She said, "Cautious, careful people, always casting about to preserve their reputation and social standing, never can bring about a reform. Those who are really in earnest must be willing to be anything or nothing in the world's estimations." So when I call upon people to be new patriots, what I'm talking about is just that. Who are you willing to be in order to cause the world you long for? What can you do? What single action can you take to cause it? See, I'd say things like, oh, inform people without confronting them. Visit chat rooms and websites and remind people of the values of democracy that are important to you. And remind them of the distinctions between what we say we believe in and how we actually choose to act in response to the world and circumstances we live with. And do it not as a judgment or criticism, but as a discussion of values, something people don't talk about too often. What you'll find out is how many people actually agree with you, and how it empowers people to find out that most people actually do agree. Now, I don't know if you believe in synchronicity or not, but I'd like to say a word about an incredible musical artist who passed away this weekend, Lionel Hampton. He played the vibraphone, an unusual instrument when you think of what typical instruments or popular artists play. I first saw him perform in the late 70s at a jazz festival at Stanford University. His performance was one of 8 different groups playing that day, and it was one of the best. And the reasons it was one of the best was mainly because you could just tell that the music was coming straight from deep inside him. About 3 years later, I was given the privilege of interviewing him for a magazine I worked for. And what a special person he is. And he told me, as many other gifted musicians have said, people like Michael Jackson, the Brothers Johnson, who did that hit Strawberry Letter 23, it's actually a good cut. Todd Rundgren, who's known as a musician but plays a bigger role, he produced the first hit album of Hall & Oates. Meatloaf, he did the last hit album of Grand Funk Railroad and wrote songs like "Love Is the Answer," you know, by England Dan and John Ford Coley, and a song called "Compassion." They all say that writing music is sort of like tapping into a big radio station in the sky. Like a broadcast. Wait, I'm not losing it here. And their job, anyway, is to write it down. Frankly, I really actually agree with them. You can hear it in the inspiration of their music. Anyway, I'll surely miss Lionel Hampton, the man. Fortunately, technology allows us to continue to treasure his music. Now, how this relates to what I'm going to say next is a little cryptic, but I think you'll understand. As I'm writing this, Larry King has come on the air with a guest, a young man who is truly remarkable. And I'll say this only partly tongue-in-cheek, but this incredible young man is singing my song. We must listen to the same station. His name is Matty Stepanek. No, that's Matthew Joseph Thaddeus Stepanek. He's one of Jerry's kids. He has an autonomic muscular dystrophy, a type which causes his body to do things like forget to breathe automatically. And the disease he has one of those real names that I just even wouldn't even dare to say. Things we normally don't have to think about. Anyway, this 12-year-old boy has released his second book of what I'll call inspirational poetry. Anyone 10 times his age would have difficulty expressing the wisdom he shares in his verses. His first book is called Heart Songs. His newest book is called Celebrate Through Heart Songs. And it's beautiful. He has a wonderful website, too. It's www.myhero.com. Now, you can look in Maddie's section. It's called The Teacher. He really is, too. He's magnificent. But for now, I'll share a bit of the message Maddie wants to share with you. We older folks have something to learn from this young man, something about the future we can help to create for all of our future leaders, the young men and women of today. Maddie basically says that we can choose our world by making choices about ourselves. He says we can choose an attitude that will cause peace. Maddie says we can choose habits that will cause peace, and that we can choose to make peace a reality. And he's so right, because if we choose these things, failure is impossible. Get his books and check out his website. That's Maddie Stepanek, and the website is myheroes.com. He's one more person who's a stand for peace and can make you believe that everything is possible. Through his distinctions he points out in his writing and his courage in dealing with his incurable disease, Maddie's been one of my favorite heroes for a few years now. More distinctions for you. You know how I criticize our government as a whole? Well, then remember I also say there are plenty of good people on both sides of the aisle. I know that gets pretty confusing, but it's all the more reason to pay attention. It would be a good thing for you to write to your reps and tell them to that you support their efforts to put the Homeland Defense departments on hold till after the elections, and that you'll help spread the word that delaying it is for more careful consideration and is in the best interest of this country in order to protect democracy and freedom. That way, the administration can't make quite as much political hay to blame the Democrats for endangering our nation by not acquiescing to his agenda. More distinctions. For example, let's see, New Patriot Senator Chuck Hagel of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and a Republican of Nebraska who's also a Vietnam veteran and just happens to have one of my favorite names, appeared on Wolf Blitzer's late edition on CNN last Sunday, and he offered a great number of distinctions about the differences between the Iraq and Vietnam conflicts, or potential conflicts, and a number of things which must be considered before launching an attack or a war. We could bomb Iraq out of existence any day of the week, but there are many things to be considered, the same things that have our military leaders concerned about launching a war at this time. In the beginning of the interview, Senator Hagel said, "You know, I have occasionally reminded some of my colleagues, and we didn't have this debate, this dialogue before Vietnam, and I understand we all do, this is not Vietnam, but there are some similarities here. We'd better understand what we're getting into before we get there." Then Wolf said, "You heard Richard Butler testify that the Iraqis may be on the verge of developing a very crude nuclear capability. If they were to do so in the coming weeks or months, that would clearly change the geostratic equation out there if the Iraqis had that proven nuclear capability." Senator Hagel's reply was, "The problem with that is, of course, Wolf, we don't have good intelligence. We don't know exactly what he has, what he does not have. We think we understand his motives rather well. We think there is rather clear evidence that he is moving to that. How far along he is, we don't know. So always, it's a timing issue. It's when, how, if the coalitions go with you, and what. That's what we're working our way through, and ultimately we're going to work with the administration on it." You can read the whole story, and you'll find it very informative, and you really have to appreciate Senator Hagel's insight and candor about what it means and takes to go to war. Internationally, almost all nations are concerned about the belligerence of the Bush administration. Russia, Kuwait, nearly all of the Arab states, China, Germany, and the list goes on and on. About their concern that the United States is so eager to go to war without seeming to care about world opinion, the United Nations, or even the Congress of the United States. Or the negative impacts on you and I, the citizens. You know, the ones who didn't elect him and don't approve of his coronation. Matthew Engel of The Guardian in the United Kingdom provides you with a unique insight into world opinion. Now, that's at the Guardian UK. There's a link right here on this page that goes along with, we call it the text version. The name of the article is called Bush Runs Out of Credit. And this is what Matthew Engel says. He says, overall, the U.S.'s list of wholehearted allies, as opposed to mutinous vassals, is now apparently down to Israel, provided it keeps getting its own way. That includes also Micronesia and the Marshall Islands. This is the kind of point oppositions are meant to pick up, but the official opposition is inaudible. In 2000, the plurality of Americans voted to put into the White House a man whose knowledge of and commitment to environmental issues was unparalleled in presidential history. He is, of course, referring to President-elect Al Gore, still waiting to be sworn in. Matthew Engel does a series of special reports on the BBC, or I'm sorry, on The Guardian, and it's called The United States of America, the series. You'll be amazed at the information you'll find at The Guardian, all organized in this special report so that you can see the patterns, all of which should educate you and the Bush administration on more reasons why the rest of the world is worried about George Bush. They even understand that the real problem is in the White House, not with the majority of Americans. By the way, I was reading CNN.com when I found these stories. That's why I like CNN. They do great reporting, and they have a commitment to the whole story. And just like me, I'm glad to send you to other sites to get the whole story, too. Let's see, also on Sunday's late edition, one of his guests was Tariq Aziz, Iraq's deputy prime minister. This is what he had to say. He says, well, we are hearing conflicting statements from the American officials. Some of them are saying what you mentioned. Some of them are saying it makes no difference whether there are inspections or not. Our plan to regime change will not change. So we would like to know in exact terms what the United States government is seeking. The other aspect of the matter is that when they speak about weapons of mass destruction, is it a genuine concern or is it a pretext to be used to justify the unjustifiable attack on Iraq? If it is a genuine concern of the United States, well, that could be dealt with in a civilized, diplomatic, practical manner. You remember that our National Assembly invited American Congress to send a team to Iraq, a fact-finding mission to Iraq to investigate those allegations. Our proposal, our invitations, was not accepted. I don't know why. If they are really concerned about this matter, why didn't they respond positively to our request? And that again was Tariq Aziz, the Iraq's deputy prime minister. And he appeared on the Sunday's late edition show with Wolf Blitzer. I really, really recommend that you read that interview. It just gives you a slightly different perspective. Meanwhile, Vice President Richard Cheney goes around telling people that Iraq is armed to the teeth and they pose a clear and present danger, and that Saddam Hussein has a master plan to dominate all the Arab oil fields, practically anything he could think of that would cause Americans to become extremely concerned over a threat that doesn't presently exist. This is a little of what Cheney said. He said, these are not weapons for the purpose of defending Iraq. These are offensive weapons for the purpose of inflicting death on a massive scale. developed so that Saddam can hold the threat over the head of anyone he chooses in his own region or beyond. Now remember, in the world of Bushisms, if you were to replace the word Iraq with Bush, you would find that the description of what is actually occurring in the world, well, that would read, these are not weapons for the purpose of defending Bush, these are offensive weapons for the purpose of inflicting death on a massive scale, like in Iraq, developed so that George can hold the threat over the head of anyone else he chooses in his own region or beyond, say like in Saudi Arabia or Pakistan or Iran or, you know, any of those places. So, seriously, read the stories. Make your own decisions. Like I always say, you don't have to believe me. And I don't have to make this stuff up. By the way, Jim, the truth always bubbles up, better sooner than later. I'm glad you read my column, though. I'm still giggling about the songbook line, though. What else? Let's see. That was all Sunday. Did I mention that new patriot Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, you know, Uncle Bill and Aunt Hillary, finally spoke out on the issue of Iraq? They raised some very interesting distinctions. He said he has no doubt the Iraqi leader has stocks of biological and chemical weapons and has used them on his own people. Clinton said there should be a large-scale public debate on whether to wage war. She said, I have personal faces I can put on this debate, and I want to be sure that the president comes with his arguments and information and evidence, and that we debate it, and then as a nation, we'll stand behind the decision. Simple but to the point and pretty rational, kind of like being in stereo, too. And even Colin Powell is having a problem with what's going on. Close aides say he intends to leave the administration after this W's first and hopefully last term. By the way, I added the hopefully. That reminds me, I decided that I was having too much trouble when saying W when talking about websites. For some reason, I just can't quite get it out. I think it's Freudian. So just assume three of them precede the web addresses I give you from now on. We now return to our regular programming. An aide to Powell said, we will have done a yeoman's job of contributing over the 4 years, but that's enough. The aide says Powell's view of the matter is, I did what my heart told me to do. I got Bush here and set him up. I did the best I could do. If Bush wins a second term, only the imminence of a major diplomatic victory in the Middle East, for example, could induce him to stay a short while longer. By the same token, the aide addresses or stresses that Powell is determined to serve out the entire term, even if the U.S. launches an invasion of Iraq, which Powell has fought to delay or derail. Of course, the White House denies the truth. I mean the idea that someone in the administration disagrees with the commandant. And hey, just because Powell understands the complexities and horrors of war, not to mention respecting the lives of our soldiers and the innocent people who inevitably get hurt in a conflict, well, hey, that's no reason to think that the guy in the White House who went AWOL should listen to anyone else. Actually, I grew to respect Powell even more than I already did when he emerged from the Ramallah compound of Yasser Arafat, you know, when the Israelis had it surrounded, and basically said there was little reason to talk about the peace process so long as Israel was occupying and destroying targets in Palestinian territory. By the way, did you ever notice that Bush and company always say that Hamas and the Islamic Jihad are doing the bulk of the bombings, but then they always blame Arafat? Sort of how, like Sharon says, Arafat is allowed to go to other countries for Arab nation conferences, but he won't be allowed back. It's an interesting strategy to consider, actually. I wonder if it has domestic applications. Anyway, it's also a lot like how we say we need to attack Iraq because we can't afford another 911, even though Iraq has nothing to do with Al-Qaeda. A strange, tangled web indeed, but lacking the detail and the facts usually associated with distinctions on any given subject enunciated by the administration. By the way, did I mention that the European Union is worried about the Bush agenda too? And isn't there a phrase about when the whole rest of the world disagrees with you? There I go again. And on the election front, George was in Pennsylvania at a picnic. That's exactly where I'd expect him to be, with the economy in the dumpers, a supposed danger of imminent attack, and an election primary in Delaware on a Jewish holiday in a state that's primarily Democratic. By the way, Bush lost Pennsylvania in the election, and he's visited there more than any other place since. We'll move on. Remember the Earth Summit for Sustainable Development? I do. Seems they're having little trouble with this one particular nation that doesn't seem to want to agree to anything having to do with environmental policy, dealing with poverty, you know, things that seem trivial while Phillips and Conoco merged to become the third largest petroleum company. I mean, let's keep our capitalistic priorities straight here. After all, what's more important? Oh, by the way, if you didn't guess, this country they're having trouble with is called the United States. And now for to-the-minute headline views. That must be a joke to someone. The Dutch say they worry about the summit's failure because it's trying to accomplish too much all at once. Kind of sounds like what Tip O'Neill said to Jimmy Carter when he took office. Meanwhile, Chirac in France intends to assert the idea of a global tax to end poverty. There's a tax I could support. Actually, I thought I was already, but it appears not. More fires in Sacramento and the San Bernardino Forest. A tornado touched down and destroyed buildings and injured people in Ladysmith, Wisconsin. I haven't checked for the latest details, but they say it's affected the entire town. Thousands are without power. And in Kentucky, this is one of my favorites. In Kentucky, believe it or not, they've banned satanic worship services in one prison, and they're considering doing the same in two more. Interesting concept. And the Bushism of the day actually goes to George himself when he said that the energy bill is a jobs bill and a national security bill, and went on to say that less imported oil, the more our national security is strong. Now that's one heck of a package in one paragraph. Notice it's centered around dredging up your concerns about national security and trying to tell you that ignoring global warming and air pollution is in your best interest because, as he also said, people need to act responsibly in our society. Which means that if we're all good boys and girls, the corporate commandant will allow us to have jobs and feed ourselves. Sounds like a very promising social program. Speaking of programs, Jan Hopkins was presenting a story on Lou Dobbs' Moneyline today and did an interesting report akin to Kevin Bacon's movie 6 Degrees of Separation. You know, like the TV land game of trying to figure out how one TV star is linked to another. Like, how is William Catt, formerly the star of The Greatest American Hero, linked to the Perry Mason show? Well, actually, that one's kind of easy. Catt is the son of the woman who plays Della Street, who just happened to be married to the detective on the show, Paul Drake, in real life, who, after dying, was replaced as Perry Mason's detective by William Catt. Kind of a long way around the bush to get to it, but that's kind of my point. The question is, what do Bob Dole, Viagra, and a bunch of other people have to do with our mystery person? Or how about Monica Lewinsky? Or try to make it even stranger. How can you link Kevin Bacon to Kenneth Lay? Or a bunch of others. It's a strange tale, and you're going to have to go to the CNN website to see it, because I'm not going to explain it to you. It gets complex. About halfway down the page on that link, and keep reading it. It's very, very interesting. It's kind of mind-boggling, actually, but we beg to boggle between debacles. It actually took me a couple minutes to come up with that line. I'm not good at B-words. Wonder if Ari is proud of me. I'm almost ready to release part one of the similarities between the O.J. Simpson trial and the case of Robert Blake. Gets more interesting all the time. You might want to check your listings for a movie called Blood Feud, in which Blake stars. It's a movie about the legal battles between the Teamsters and Robert Kennedy. In the meantime, Here are some interesting entertainment notes. Steve Warner, he's pretty good, of country music fame, did a song called I'd Love to Be With You a number of years back. He received the Minnie Pearl Humanitarian Award. Ronnie Millsap has a new CD set out with his all-time greatest hits. That's an interesting story, too. The writer of most of his later hits were written by Mike Green, former football player for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Of course, Chicago's got a greatest hit set out, too. I like the song, Does Anybody Really Know What Time It Is? In the middle of the song, on the LP anyway, they start talking, and it's always, you know, so lifelike. I end up looking out the windows and locking the doors because I think somebody's there. It's kind of like the Pink Floyd album Pigs, where you keep wondering where that barking dog is. And that song, Another Brick in the Wall, it's got helicopters in it that sound like they're right above your house. It's a sort of Orwellian effect. And you know what? There's been an Elvis sighting on the border of Tennessee and Arizona. It's true. Somebody stomped one of those cool pictures into a crop field again. They did it with an image of Larry King up in New England a few weeks ago. We're either experiencing some aliens with a sense of humor or some really bored but creative unemployed people who wanted something to do on Labor Day weekend. Plenty of those to go around, too. In July, the jobless rate was at 5.9%, or about 1.7 million people. Or maybe it was one of those Mel Gibson signs. And that's a wrap. You have a good one. This is DemocraticFundamentalism.org. I'm Charles. Good night.